Blog Talk Radio.
Finally sees the light and sees through a charlatan con artist of a president. We have Barack Hussein Obama. I'm not fixated on the man. No, I'm not obsessed. No, 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 no. It's just that he seems to be the central figure in this play. He's the principal character. He is the star of the show, if you will. Today's date, January 28th, 2011, Washington, D.C., planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Got a lot to get to tonight and not a lot of time to get to it. All right, I want to start this off with a very unfortunate audio clip. It's unfortunate because it features an actor whom I had come to respect for a while until he decided to force his political views upon public, much like I do on a daily basis, but there's no hypocrisy here. It's extremely unfortunate. I'm going to go ahead and play it here, and I'd like to share this with you.
And think about that violence now in relationship to what is happening in Tucson. You know, even though we know that this young man is just deranged in some way, this side that drove him to that act with the kind of vitriol, the kind of nasty, just villainous violence that's happening. The violence that happened even during, you know, town hall meetings in during the healthcare crisis, the healthcare debate and everything, all this kind of violence. And then you take again that the wars. King talks about that. That violence comes home. That violence comes home to haunt us.
The violence of the violence of Tucson has come home to haunt us, based on vitriol. It's actually vitriol. But I give the Danny his due, because apparently he is just another tired old man. I don't know how much more I can say about what you just heard here. This is what happens when you when a man goes senile right before your very eyes. He's a tired old man. Completely, obviously he's suffering from dementia of some sort because, I mean, it's been established all over that the young man was not a Republican. He was not a conservative. He didn't listen to talk radio. He did not watch Fox News. He was no fan of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly. In fact, his friends describe him as a pot-smoking liberal. So when Danny talks about the vitriol, which seems to be the word of the year here, and what's he talking about? When he spoke about the violence and the town hall meetings, what violence? To my mind, I don't even recall Democrats putting forth much violence. There was a couple of incidents, but certainly nothing in the realm of gunfire. Not even a single chair was thrown, to my knowledge. But isn't Danny Glover the same guy who starred in Lethal Weapon 1 through 12? Or 1 through 5 or 1 through 4? Where the violence in those movies was wholesale? But I guess when Danny's making a decent buck, he's getting rich off of portraying a violent character. I guess that's okay, because it's just TV, right? Dr. King spoke about that. Did Dr. King speak about that, Danny? You playing a cop who goes around shooting folks? Blowing up stuff? I suppose not. Well, I think that little clip about with Danny Glover, you know, that pretty much speaks for itself. A couple things we want to get into tonight. There's a lot to talk about. There's the situation in Egypt, where President Mubarak pretty much established himself as president for life. Been president of that country for 30 years. Elections were held, but somehow he always won. He always came out on top. So the people have decided, and good for them, that they've had quite enough. And guess what? Egypt is a country that, everybody's the same. There are few wealthy citizens, and everybody's pretty much poor. You know, like the like a socialist utopia, like a fundamental transformation that's been going on for 30 years. People are tired of being treated like collective slaves in Egypt, and they're rising up. And Hosni Mubarak has decided to go ahead and shut off the internet and TV. Just shut it off so the folks can't communicate. While back home here in the United States of America, well, the government is seeking to provide Barack Hussein Obama with the very same power to shut down the internet, an internet kill switch, if you will. Did you know that? Did you know that at all? Okay. Let's get to the meat of the matter for tonight. Barack Obama is no centrist. President Obama is trying to reposition himself as a moderate. His State of the Union address was aimed at convincing the public that he is serious about fiscal responsibility and reining in out-of-control budget deficits. His public relations offensive boils down to one seminal theme. Socialism is out. Centrism is in. Hence, Mr. Obama called for a freeze on discretionary spending, affecting numerous domestic agencies. He wants to work with the Republicans to fix his health care debacle, to reform it, if you will, but not to repeal it. He has a newfound opposition to earmarks as well. Now he is a champion of bipartisan consensus building. But don't buy it, folks. The address, the State of the Union address, was an obvious attempt to con the electorate, you and me, into forgetting not only the past 2 years, but Mr. Obama's real agenda. And that is the transformation of America into a social democrat state. For example, a spending freeze is nothing more than smoke and mirrors. It's a clumsy attempt to look serious about the looming debt crisis. His freeze would not only lock in the record high levels of spending implemented by his administration, it would fail to make any dent in the runaway entitlement programs and other costly programs which are the real threat, and I say threat, to our national sovereignty. I didn't mean sovereignty, but that too. Mr. Obama he's a fantasist. He's what we call a fantasist. His demands for a spending freeze are akin to rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. But why? Why would he want to poke holes in a sinking ship? The American economy is about to crash upon the rocks of fiscal reality, and yet Barack Obama somehow sees clear skies ahead. The smartest person in the room? The day after his con artist address, the Congressional Budget Office released the estimate for this year's budget deficit. How much? $1.5 trillion. I know we've been using the word trillion, just kind of throwing it around like it's, you know, it doesn't really mean much anymore. We use it so much this past couple of years. But this $1.5 trillion deficit is the largest deficit in U.S. history. And it comes on top of Mr. Obama's previous trillion-dollar blowouts. Obama is burying America under a mountain of red ink. He is not only fiscally reckless, but morally bankrupt. His spend and borrow policies are mortgaging future generations, saddling them with a massive debt that will be almost impossible to repay. Now, I have friends who have adult children. I have friends who have teenage children. I even have some friends who have small children. They, every single one, defends Obama's spending. They defend Obama in particular. And when I point out the fact that, that their children and their children's children will suffer as a result of what Obama is doing, what his policies are, what his beliefs are. They dismiss it. It's as if they don't want to believe that we are in dire circumstances here. Under Mr. Obama's watch, America is being reduced to a second-class nation. Our trade deficits are huge. The dollar is plummeting. Investment, capital, and businesses are fleeing. The economy remains stagnant. Unemployment is high. Power and wealth are slowly shifting toward the East, especially China. All of this is fact. Does anybody care? It's no accident that Mr. Obama, and I say Mr. Obama because I don't, using the word president is disrespectful to former presidents. But it's no accident that Mr. Obama deliberately singled out Beijing for praise in his address, welcoming the rise of the communist giant. As America amasses more debt, the Chinese are buying up our treasury bonds. China is financing our orgy of deficit spending. The result, Washington is becoming an economic vassal of Beijing, China. Mr. Obama, slowly but surely, is undermining U.S. national sovereignty, making America increasingly dependent upon Chinese largesse. This is the ultimate price for becoming the world's largest debtor nation. We no longer control our own destiny. Uncle Sam now bows down, like Barack Obama has bowed down to every king, potentate, and dictator that he's ever come across. Uncle Sam, like Barack Obama, now bows to the red dragon. None of this matters to Mr. Obama. At his core, he is a radical leftist who seeks to dismantle capitalism and the achievements of the Reagan Revolution. Low taxes, deregulation, and the reassertion of American exceptionalism. In fact, like most ideologues, Mr. Obama is quite open about his intentions. Despite forging a popular tax deal with Republicans, the president in his speech returned to the cardinal principle of the progressive left. What's that? Class warfare. He vows that the Bush tax cuts would not be extended permanently, saying the only way to curtail skyrocketing deficits effectively is to raise taxes on the wealthy. Those making more than $200,000 a year are considered to be wealthy. The Democratic strategy has been to erect a bloated Franco-German entitlement state, which is marked by high spending and burdensome regulatory oversight. In order to compel huge tax increases and Obamacare, the stimulus package, the massive expansion of government power, all of this has led to runaway deficits and a fiscal reckoning. Mr. Obama understands that European-style spending inevitably results in European-style taxation. He is the consummate anti-Reagan. And what is happening here in America is that we're that frog I speak about often, who is put in a vat of cool water. And then that vat of cool water is placed on the stove. And the heat is gradually increased. The frog has no idea what is about to happen to him. Or perhaps he does. And he seems powerless to do anything. He can't get out of the water. Slowly the heat rises and the water begins to heat up. And finally the water comes to a boil. And, well, you know what happens to the frog next. Well, that's what's happening here to us, Americans. As I've stated in previous monologues, Americans, many of my friends, they get out of bed, they get dressed, they go to work. They're not really paying attention to what's going on in the world, in the United States, with this administration, with politics in general. Oh, I hear, Barack Obama, he's the first black president. Barack Obama, he's so handsome. Barack Obama, he's so smart. Barack Obama, Barack Obama, Barack Obama. But speak of his policies, and it's as if they have no clue, no understanding of exactly what his policies mean and what they will mean to the lives of them or their children. Yes. Obama shares one key similarity with my idol, Ronald Reagan. The nature of his political enemies. Reagan's good fortune was to be constantly underestimated by his liberal critics. Mr. Obama is enjoying a similar fate, as I spoke just a moment ago. Conservatives keep writing him off, and he keeps coming back. He has not only consolidated his welfare liberalism in the face of popular resistance, he has outmaneuvered his GOP rivals at almost every turn. Despite being trounced in the November 2 elections, Mr. Obama has effectively neutered the Republicans. He coerced them into agreeing to a tax deal that amounts to a second stimulus. A vast package of tax cut extensions and unemployment benefits that will kickstart the economy in time for his reelection campaign. He has achieved his top social policy objective, repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which prohibited gays from openly serving in the military. It is a cultural watershed. Speaking from one who served for nearly 30 years. The gay movement has toppled society's last great conservative institution, the armed forces. He has managed to get the new START treaty passed, which essentially prevents America from developing a viable missile defense system. And all of this was done with GOP collusion. I dread that Mr. Obama is a Machiavellian socialist taking a page from the playbook of his hero, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The New Deal failed to revive the economy and led to huge deficits. Yet FDR kept getting reelected because he used government handouts to buy votes and bribe electoral constituencies. Call it interest group politics through state-sanctioned corruption. Mr. Obama is following the same model, folks. He is cynically buying off key voting blocks, public sector unions, blacks, Hispanics, feminists, homosexuals, students, upper-class white liberals, and environmentalists. Mr. Obama is the very opposite of a centrist. He is seeking to finish the ambitious liberal project begun by FDR. Republicans were unable to stop FDR then, and they are increasingly unable to stop Mr. Obama today. Conservatives, John Boehner, our speaker, please, beware. Now, America is in dire financial straits. The liberal media is ignoring this. Why? I am pleased that there are congressmen, politicians who are coming out and openly stating that their beliefs that Obama is a socialist and his agenda is to ruin this country. I'd like for you to listen to this comment made by a very popular congressman right after Obama delivered his address. Check out.
If guests don't come down to visit our beaches, we don't have an economy. My wife and I managed the Cayman rental homes here. We were booked up for the entire year, and then the oil spilled here. I didn't know what to expect, but BP did what they said they were going to do. I brought my cancellations, and BP made up the difference. Now the beaches are clean, and tourists are coming back. And we're looking forward to a great next year. Come on down. Our Gulf Coast is open for business.
Last night at the end of the State of the Union address, you tweeted, "Mr. President, you don't believe in the Constitution. You believe in socialism."
Absolutely. Everything he does is bigger government, more central control in Washington, D.C. That's not what founding fathers envisioned the government to be. I believe in the original intent of the Constitution, which means that the federal government should just be doing basically the 18 things in Article 1, Section 8, very little else. My job should be a part-time job. Mr. Obama believes in a big central government where the federal government controls everything in our lives. That's socialism, and so I stick by that tweet.
What specifically in his speech that screams socialism to you?
Well, everything he does. He wants to have the federal government take over the health care system. He doesn't want us to repeal it, obviously. It's his flagship type of policy that he's pushed through against the will of the American people, and it's geared towards becoming a socialized medicine program. In fact, he said just before Obamacare was passed into law, he wanted everybody in one pool. What's that mean? It means that he wants everybody to be on a government insurance program where the federal bureaucrats direct the health care to everybody, where decisions are taken out of the hands of doctors like myself and patients and put in the hands of bureaucrats here in Washington, D.C. The socialized medicine, everything I've seen from this president, and he has a philosophy of a socialistic agenda, and that's what he's promoted ever since he's been in office.
That's a very strong statement, though, to say that the President of the United States doesn't believe in the Constitution.
Well, he doesn't. When I was sworn in the Marine Corps in 1964, when I was sworn into Congress, I swore to uphold the Constitution against enemies both foreign and domestic. We have a lot of domestic enemies of the Constitution, those who want to pervert it, those who want to change it. There's some that are in black robes and sitting on federal benches all across this country. There are Democrats and Republicans, liberals, and even conservatives that pervert the Constitution according to the original intent of our founding fathers.
Are you calling the president, though, a domestic enemy?
Well, his philosophy of big government is against the Constitution. It's against what our founding fathers believed in. It's against everything that's made this country great. We've got to change that philosophy of government. We've got to put people up here. The president to senators and congressmen who believe in the original intent of the Constitution. And that's what's going to turn this country around, that's what's going to make this country great again. I believe in American conceptualism. The American people do, too. And what made this country great was limited government and the free enterprise system.
In the end, you saw, you know, the Republicans and Democrats, many of them sitting together last night. You had said that you thought that was in some ways trying to silence Republicans. Do you think they ultimately did that?
Well, I think it did. I think it silenced Democrats, too. I think if you saw the speech, as I did, from my office, as I did last year and did again this year and tweeted during the course, you didn't have the rambunctious response that the Democrats did last year. So I think it silenced both sides. I think it was a very good political move on the Democrats' part to try to silence Republicans, also to show that how few Democrats are really here in the House of Representatives. And so, and also, I think it's a means of trying to keep the American people from delineating between two parties through the speech and what one party accepts and applauds and what the other party doesn't accept and doesn't applaud, and vice versa. So, yeah, I think it did silence both sides, really.
The whole reason it was done, though, was after the Tucson shooting where Congressman Giffords was shot, some of them thought it would be a good idea to show a sign of unity. That sign and maybe a new level of civility and discourse actually could be a good thing?
I think we need to be civil. We can talk about issues. I think the personal attacks that a lot of people do are probably not good and good for the country. But the thing is, there's a wide difference between the philosophy of the Democratic leadership up here in Washington, because they believe in top-down type of government. They believe the federal government should do everything for everybody and take care of every human endeavor and direct everything from Washington, D.C. That's socialism. Whereas Republicans, by and large, and the American people overwhelmingly believe in freedom. They believe in liberty. They believe in personal responsibility. They believe in the free enterprise system. That gulf between those two is a very wide gulf that's hard to bridge.
At the end of the day, though, 2 years into President Obama's presidency, do you think that things are better than they were 2 years ago when the economy was on the brink of collapse?
He hasn't done a thing to help this economy. The resiliency of the American economy is the only reason that we don't have a worse economy than we have today. In fact, his policies have been an abject failure.
Thank God for men like the great congressman from Georgia. A good man, a true American patriot who believes in this country, the free enterprise system, and the freedom of Americans everywhere. You see what's happening in Egypt? Now, the Egyptians have lived under Hosni Mubarak's system of government for 30 years and beyond. They want to be free. They want a more just system. They don't want to live under socialism. They don't want to live in a system where there's no free enterprise. They don't want to live in a system where they're not afforded the freedom to live life as they choose. And they're rebelling tonight. Now, contrast what's going on in Egypt right now, in what Barack Obama and his minions are proposing for America. Think about the sort of violence that could come about as a result of Barack Hussein Obama's policies. Ultimately, when the vast majority of Americans become fed up with this budding dictatorship that Barack Obama seeks to establish here in this country. There will be blood. There will be violence. And yes, it sounds horrible, and it's horrible for me to say. Americans know nothing but freedom. We know nothing but the freedom to say what we want, be what we want, do what we want, go where we want to go, when we want to go, all of that, and more. Of course, we have laws, and we have regulations, but for the most part, we live our lives more freely than any other civilized nation on this planet. Barack Obama seems to want to regulate nearly every aspect of our lives as if he and his hideous wife, Michelle, somehow know best for us. How do they think this is going to end? I sometimes wonder how Barack Obama thinks this is all going to turn out in the end. Does he believe that we Americans are nothing more than sheep who will go along with his gun control, his suggesting that schools no longer serve tater tots? What does he have to do with that? One would think that he would have a little bigger fish to fry. His desire to regulate the internet, to regulate every aspect of our lives. He was a junior senator from Illinois. He's president of the United States now, but does he actually believe that Americans will stand by and allow their freedoms to be taken away, peace by peace? I am anxiously awaiting this next election cycle, 2012. I would really like to believe that the vast majority of Americans will wake up and smell the cappuccino and come to understand that this president means us, America, no damn good. None. I'd like to turn your attention to Michelle Bachmann's Tea Party response to the State of the Union. Listen closely. Forget that it's coming from Michelle Bachmann if you don't prefer her. Forget that she's a conservative. Dismiss the fact that she's a woman. And just listen to what she says. And then decide for yourself if it makes sense, if the words are logical, if it makes sense.
Good evening. My name is Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota's 6th District. I want to thank the Tea Party Express and Tea Party AC for inviting me to speak this evening. I'm here at their request and not to compete with the official Republican remarks. The Tea Party is a dynamic force for good in our national conversation, and it's an honor for me to speak with you. 2 years ago, when Barack Obama became our president, unemployment was 7.8%, and our national debt stood at what seemed like a staggering $10.6 trillion. We wondered whether the president would cut spending, reduce the deficit, and implement real job-creating policies. Unfortunately, the president's strategy for recovery was to spend $1 trillion on a failed stimulus program fueled by borrowed money. The White House promised us that all the spending would keep unemployment under 8%. Well, not only did that plan fail to deliver, but within 3 months, the national jobless rate spiked to 9.4%. It hasn't been lower for 20 straight months. While the government grew, we lost more than 2 million jobs. Let me show you a chart. Here are unemployment rates over the past 10 years. In October of 2001, our national unemployment rate was at 5.3%. In 2008, it was at 6.6%. But just 8 months after President Obama promised lower unemployment, that rate spiked to a staggering 10.1%. Today, unemployment is at 9.4% with about 400,000 new claims every week. After the $700 billion bailout, the trillion-dollar stimulus, and the massive budget bill with over 9,000 earmarks, many of you implored Washington to please stop spending money that we don't have. But instead of cutting, we saw an unprecedented explosion of government spending and debt. It was unlike anything we'd ever seen before in the history of the country. Well, deficits were unacceptably high under President Bush, but they exploded under President Obama's direction, growing the national debt by an astounding $3.1 trillion. Well, what did we buy? Instead of a leaner, smarter government, we bought a bureaucracy that now tells us which light bulbs to buy and which may put 16,500 IRS agents in charge of policing President Obama's health care bill. Obamacare mandates and penalties may even force many job creators to just stop offering health insurance altogether, unless, of course, yours is one of the more than 222 privileged companies or unions that's already received a government waiver under Obamacare. In the end, unless we fully repeal Obamacare, a nation that currently enjoys the world's finest health care might be forced to rely on government-run coverage that had a devastating impact on our national debt for even generations to come. For 2 years, President Obama made promises just like the ones we heard him make this evening. Yet still, we have high unemployment, devalued housing prices, and the cost of gasoline is skyrocketing. Well, here's a few suggestions for fixing our economy. The president could stop the EPA from imposing a job-destroying cap-and-trade system. The president could support a balanced budget amendment. The president could agree to an energy policy that increases American energy production and reduces our dependence on foreign oil. The president could also turn back some of the 132 regulations put in place in the last 2 years, many of which will cost our economy $100 million or more. And the president should repeal Obamacare and support free market solutions like medical malpractice reform, allowing all Americans to buy any health care policy they like anywhere in the United States. We need to start making things again in this country, and we can do that by reducing the tax and regulatory burden on job creators. America will have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. Think about that. Look no further to see why jobs are moving overseas. But thanks to you, there's reason for all of us to have hope that real spending cuts are coming. Because last November, you went to the polls and you voted out the big spending politicians. You put in their place great men and women with a commitment to follow our Constitution and cut the size of government. I believe that we're in the very early days of a history-making turn in America. Please know how important your calls, visits, and letters are to the maintenance of our liberties. Because of you, Congress is responding, and we're just beginning to start to undo the damage that's been done the last few years. Because we believe in lower taxes. We believe in a limited view of government and exceptionalism in America.
And I believe that America is the indispensable nation of the world. Just the creation of this nation itself was a miracle. Who can say that we won't see a miracle again? The perilous battle that was fought during World War II in the Pacific at Iwo Jima was a battle against all odds. And yet, this picture immortalizes the victory of young GIs over the incursion against the Japanese. These six young men raising the flag came to symbolize all of America coming together to beat back a totalitarian aggressor. Our current debt crisis we face today is different, but we still need all of us to pull together. But we can do this. That's our hope. We will push forward. We will proclaim liberty throughout the land, and we will do so because we, the people, will never give up on this great nation. So God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Hear, hear. That address brought a tear to my eye when she came on shortly after Representative Paul Ryan gave his response. You know, I'm often asked, as a black man, many of you know that I refuse to use the term African American. As a black man, many people say, how can you be a conservative? You're black. How can you be a Republican? You're black. I say, how could I not be? I have a deep, deep love for this country, my country. I've taken many road trips. I've driven many miles across this great country. I have visited all seven continents. I've set foot on each one. There is no place like home. There's no place like America. Due to my extensive travels around the globe as a military man, I'm often asked, what's your favorite place to visit? I respond readily, Washington, D.C. A look of confusion or a pause if I'm speaking to someone on the phone and they'll say, well, what do you mean, Washington, D.C.? You've been all over the world. And I respond, yes. Yes, I have. But the most beautiful, the most important, the most interesting place that I've ever visited was Washington, D.C. Not so much some of the urban areas of Washington, D.C. I do explain. There are some parts of Washington, D.C. that even a Marine won't venture into. No, I'm talking about the Washington Monument, the White House, the old Executive Office Building, the Capitol, Lincoln Memorial. I once had a little too much to drink after celebrating one 4th of July weekend. And mind you, there's no place to be other than on the mall in Washington, D.C. on the 4th of July. Well, had a little bit too much to drink, was partying in Georgetown. Found myself waking one morning as the sun rose, asleep on Lincoln's lap, the date was July 5th, 1987. And I tell you what, it wasn't very comfortable. there was some work being done, I guess cleaning of the statue, and there was a ladder just on the side and just barely visible, and I found myself visiting the Lincoln Memorial, especially on the 4th of July, and I guess I saw the ladder, and I climbed up the ladder and climbed into Lincoln's lap, and I recall sitting there for a few minutes and just sitting on Lincoln's lap, and oddly as that sounds, and then the next thing you know, I woke up the next morning asleep on Lincoln's lap. Thank God I didn't shift too much, or I might have fallen off and killed myself. So, whenever I'm asked, and I often am, what my favorite place to visit in the whole wide world is, it's an easy choice. Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Now, America is a beautiful country. But it's more than that. It's about being free. It's not about having my freedom taken away. So that someone else can, well, I don't know. I don't really know what to say. But I will say this, Obama makes Egypt about himself. It was when I was in Cairo, shortly after I was elected, after he gave his speech on the riots, or his take on the riots in Egypt, it was I, and me. There has never, and I've done some research in this area, been a president who used the word I and me in an official capacity more than Barack Obama has. Why doesn't this fact turn more people off of this guy? Democrats charged in massive voter fraud. Obama says that Granny is safe while mocking foes on health care. My goodness. This guy's got to go. 2012, November, cannot come soon enough. The oldest member of the Band of Brothers, who fought in some of the Second World War's fiercest European battles, has died at 94. He was born in 1916 in LaSalle, Illinois. He was drafted in 1942. Remember the HBO series Band of Brothers? Michelle Obama says that women should leave work and mentor a kid. She doesn't say whether one should mentor their own kids or someone else's. And what should the person who leaves work do? Do you mean leave work after working hours, or just get up and leave work? I see. First Lady Michelle Obama on Tuesday said she was thrilled to announce a new program Another one that asked U.S. businesses to allow employees to spend part of the workday volunteering with young people. The program will be run by the federal agency tasked with overseeing volunteerism in the United States. Why do we need the federal government to oversee volunteerism? Shouldn't volunteering come from your own heart and your own time? And, well, maybe that's old-fashioned now. Maybe we need the United States government to get involved in how and when and where we volunteer. Isn't this all sounding just a little bit bad? Do you want to be counseled or nudged into when, where, how, and with whom you should volunteer your time to by the federal government? Are you all getting this? Is anybody getting this? Does anybody care? Anybody at all? Or are you just okay with it? Is it okay? Is it just okay? You just kind of go along with it? You just going to say, hey, this is just the way it is. He's president. His wife's the first lady. We got to do what they say. Why not? It's historic. It's unprecedented. It's vitriolic. It's all that stuff. Well, our time is up for now. I just hope that enough of you decide that you don't want this sort of life in America where the government decides for you what you should do, how you should do it, and when you should do it. You've got to decide. All right. There are angels among us, and we're going to need them. Y'all have a good night. Have a great weekend, and we'll pick up again on Monday. Love you. Thank you for listening.
I was walking home from school on a cold winter day. Took a shortcut through the woods, and I lost my way. It was getting late, and I was scared and alone. But then a kind old man took my hand and led me home. Now mama couldn't see him, oh, but he was standing there. And I knew in my heart he was the answer to my prayers. Oh, send down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hours to show us how to live, teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of when life held troubled times and had me down on my knees. There's always been someone to come along and comfort me. A kind word from a stranger to lend a helping hand. A phone call from a friend just to say I understand. But ain't it kind of funny, at the dark end of the road, that someone lights the way with just a single from somewhere up above, they come to you and me. In our darkest hours, show us how to live, to teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of love. They wear so many faces, show up in the strangest places, to grace us with their mercy in our time of need. Oh, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hours, show us how to live, teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of love, to guide us with the light of love.